Hello and good morning, listeners. This is your host, Kifa Mohamedou, and this is Black Talk. Today, we have a segment. We're looking at the conditions of people in the U.S., particularly the Bay Area plus the outskirts that we would call the suburb, like Sacramento, Stockton, and previous areas where gentrification is real and live right now as we see today. That's happening around these areas. Now look at the conditions of the blacks in the 80s versus of the conditions today. And when we look at these things, it still is no change or no progress has been made as a whole. Because you could look at sometimes as individuals and say, well, this person made it, that person made it. But as a whole, we have taken several steps back since the 60s, if we looked at historically. In the 60s, when our people were pushing or on the front lines, we made progress by blood, sweat, and tears. But in the conditions of today, with our youth, we have digressed. And everything that we have strove to achieve has been taken away. Or we have been marginalized, if you understand that, so to say. So let's look at a couple of cities per se. And me myself being out of the loop, sitting on the sidelines for almost 20 years, I come back and realize that there has been a dramatic transformation in these different cities. From Oakland to San Francisco to Sacramento to Stockton. I'm from Oakland, California. So I know about the demographics in my city. When you look at in the 80s or the 90s, Oakland was predominantly black. And you look at the drug area during that time, during the 80s drug wars, Get Tough on Crime, the Reagan era, Nancy Reagan, you know, all of these things, you look back and you can reflect back that LA, Oakland, all of these little cities, Compton, opened up for cocaine to come into. And the youth among my age, we had nothing to do per se, but we wanted out of the hood, as we called it. We wanted out of the ghetto, as we called it. And when we look at the word the ghetto was used for the Jews. But we have a way to use the ghetto for ourselves now as black people. So looking at the 80s, when a lot of us turned to selling crack cocaine, they were freebasing, something that was new in 83, 82. Then the pipe came. 1984 was a pivotal year among black people, because a lot of us, including myself, start selling cocaine at a young age. And I can look back and remember that ounces were $2,500 an ounce. So the youngsters didn't have that type of money. I started selling drugs at 13 years old, selling for 20 out of 100. So you would have five rocks and you sell one, you receive $20 out of that 100. And then it was very popular, I guess you could say, because that night you could make about $100, $200 or more for yourself. You made the drug man rich, but as a 13-year-old making $200, $300 a day, making more than his own parents, you would say you were doing pretty well. Now, since that era, we look at the era that we're in now, the crank era, as I guess that's what they call it now, crank, or they have methamphetamine. There's several different names for this drug. And that was a white man's drug. And since then, since suburbia, white suburbia, is caught up with the methamphetamine, the crank, there's an epidemic. But when you look at in the 80s, there was no epidemic. It was black folk get high, black folk going to jail, black folk sell drugs, black folk going to jail. White folk sell crank, there's an issue. White folk get high, there's an epidemic. Painkillers, all of these things. Now, since, like I told you, I was out of the loop about 17, 18 years, came back, black folk is doing crank, methamphetamine. This blew my mind. Because now the shift, there's a pivotal shift. Now, before that, black folk got high on cocaine, did a little weed, or down in LA, you had black folk getting high on sherm, what they call sherm sticks, dipping a vomit fluid in a cigarette. So that's what they were getting high. It came up north, but it didn't stick like it stuck down south. And when I mean up north is the Bay Area, when I mean down south is LA. So it didn't have that appeal as it did in LA. But cocaine had a very appeal. Even when we look at now, heroin had its way, and by the 80s or 90s started fizzling out. But then heroin came back, and you've seen a lot of the youth going to heroin. So we all understand this is by design, especially when you look at the areas that it predominantly hit, when you look at the different demographic areas that it hit, because Oakland was predominantly black, as I said before, but the cocaine era, it didn't hit Alameda, would be South Oakland, if we had a South, but they named that city Alameda, where predominantly is white, middle class, upper class people. But the cocaine didn't hit over there too much, or the heroin didn't hit over there too much, but it was concentrated in Oakland, concentrated in Richmond, concentrated in San Francisco. And when you look at San Francisco, it was only concentrated in certain areas, like in the hood or the projects, as they called it, in Betrayal Hill, Army Street, Harbor Row, all of these areas that had predominantly black folks there. So we know this was all by design. Even to this day, a lot of things were designed by the white man. Let's call it as it is, or let's see it as it is. Because when you or one of your family members was on Section 8 and you caught a drug case, you couldn't live there no more. And then you had the potential to get a family member put out and lose their Section 8. And as I have taught my students and tried to show them the difference between a man and a male, as well as a woman and a female. This is important, black folk, that you have to understand the difference. Now, a male and a female is known by their genital makeup. We're all clear on that. So, a male, you know him because of his genital makeup. A female, you know by her genital makeup as well. So, but a woman and a man are individuals who have minds of understanding. So when we look at this, a man could be a male and a woman could be a female. And we know this by their genital makeup. But a male and a female cannot be a man and a woman. Why is that? Because their understanding has not reached the plateau of a man and a woman. You might ask me, how come? Let me explain. A man and a woman are not going to be running around having their pants sagged down under their butt. They're not going to be drinking a 40 ounce at 8 in the morning and smoking on weed with no job to go to. So this is the difference, and there's many more differences, but I know you get the point as of now. So we have to redesign our way of thinking and the concept of where we're going, black folk, because now our thinking and our concepts are no good. This is why gentrification is so real. This is why people in Frisco, in Oakland, are moving out. Because we never owned anything. Even as drug dealers, we owned a Mercedes or a Cadillac while our girlfriend was on Section 8. And we thought all of this would last forever. But we woke up and realized that it's not working. But some people are still asleep at the wheel and going over the cliff. Because they still think they have another hustle or another avenue to make things work. And when we look at, for Oakland per se, we look at all the Mexicans have came back. We have issues with how they did things. But the Mexicans, they had a foolproof program that has worked. How? 19 Mexicans in one house, 19 chefs coming to one house. They not only buy the house, but they buy the whole block. They not only take these minimum wage jobs, but they take the odd jobs too, and buy the whole block, and buy the whole neighborhood. Now, they also see how to get in politics and transform their communities. Black folk, what have we done? What have we transformed? How have we been an instrumental voice in our own community? We have seen police gunned down. Black after black after black. And still, we go out in March. 2 weeks later, nothing has been done. So, a lot of things have been said. And also with the gentrification, it has left many, many black folk homeless. Many. I have seen hundreds, if not thousands, of black folk out in the street, homeless. And on top of that, I have seen many black folk, men, and a couple of sisters coming home from prison after a long stint with nowhere to go. There's no job opportunities, and there have been no openings for education. for black folk. So, as Malcolm has said, if you stab him in his back and you take the knife out 9 inches, is that any progress? No, because the knife is still in your back. No progress has been made. No matter if it came out 9 inches. So we want to open this up for talk and dialogue and find some solutions, not just for 10 people, but for 10,000 black folk. And we need to open this dialogue up sooner than later and see what can be done. This is an important topic because it's real murky for our youth, the future of our youth. One of the ways to get out that we used to do was sports. Or this is why you see all the youth want to be rappers or producers, because that was another way that they seen of getting out of the neighborhood. Me in my neighborhood, I seen several people get out or try to attempt to get out and become celebrities in my neighborhood. I will name a couple. One that is still rapping today, his name is Jugmouth. Another one, his name was Seagram. Another one name was Pooh Man. And there has been other people that have came out of the projects, out of the 69th, 65th village where I grew up and came from, made it out of the village. And then you have other areas where, and other cities that you see that rappers or basketball player, football players, or baseball players made it out of their neighborhoods or ghettos or hoods, as they say. So some of the solutions, we all have to look at these and analyze and articulate what's the best move as a whole for black folk. Because there's many issues, from drugs to selling drugs to being homeless to coming home from prison with nothing. These are all ills that are in the black community today. So some say the solution is education. Some say the solution are jobs. Some say the solution are entrepreneur skills or entrepreneurship. Some say the issues are religion. These are all the solutions that has been talked about. But what works for some may not work for others. So we have to look at what's going to work as a whole. This is very important because, once again, we're talking as a whole for our communities. Now we're scattered. Now we have to see what is a community. Because once again, we don't own anything. So where are the communities? So those with power, those with money, those with resources, those with educational skills, those with solutions, we need to have a round table and sit down and see what is the best solution for our people moving forward. Those with religious skills as well. We need to come down to the table and have a sit down. And after the sit down, not just sit down, but move with action. Because a lot of people have the solution for as in a collegiate way. But putting it in the practical, this is where the problem has been. And don't forget about our people has been enslaved, and then the mind that has been passed down, the relationship that has been passed down with one another, that we can't work with one another, or I'm not working with that end. And this is another issue when you look at your brother or your sister as, and I'm just going to say the word, I don't use the word, and I tried to stop the youth from today from using this word, that you say, I don't mess with that nigga. This is crazy. A word that a white man gave to us, some of our ancestors, the last word that they heard before they were hung on a tree was die nigga. And then we want to come and use that word as if that is a refreshing word to us. This is one of the problems with our mind and our understanding. How dare us to take a word that's come from the Greek meaning nekrai, meaning mentally dead, so that they took this word, no matter how you look at it, Negro, nigga, nigger, it doesn't matter. It means mentally dead from the Greek. So how could you use this word and feel comfortable, good, and rich about yourself, black man or black woman, and say that I'm a nigga? You have to have lost your mind and all sense of purpose in life to sit there and call yourself a nigga. And what is a trip that society follows the black man and the black woman? If you think I'm lying, check out this rap music. You have Asians want to be rappers. You have Mexicans that's rapping now. Who started it? It started on the East Coast, from far back, what I know, as the OGs say, they take it back further to the six poets. As some say, it may go further back. Some say it go back to the Rapper's Delight. But as far as I can remember, it's in the early 80s in the East Coast, in the Bronx. And that was clean, holistic rap, uplifting black folk, not tearing us down. Now today, this rap music, everybody's a B-I-T-C-H and everybody's a H-O-E. And every male is a pimp. This is what they're putting out to our babies to this day. Now, understand this, that we have to have a holistic understanding about who we are. There's a whole holistic history about who we are, where we come from, and what we were. But guess what, black folk? We don't even go and pick up the books and see who we are today. If you don't know who you were, If you don't know who you are, if you don't know whence from where that you came or where you're heading, you're doomed to lose. You are doomed to lose. So, let's open this dialogue up. I invite all questions. I invite all solutions at this round talk. This podcast is about you and I. It's open to anyone, any race, creed, color. But the polemics and the politics is about black folk. We need to understand that until we get ourselves together, we can never help another race, creed, or color as a whole. Because once again, like I said, on an individual level, you have millionaires that are black. You have, if not, a couple of billionaires that are black. But I'm talking as a whole, and I'm talking about as in the individual capacity of those in the hood. Those that I walk by every day that I see that are homeless in the Oakland streets, in San Francisco streets, Sacramento streets, in the Stockton streets, in Richmond streets. Those are the people that I am trying to reach, and those are the people that I will be making dialogues with. Now, I'm saying I will not be talking to the upper class, because we need a dialogue with them. And we need a chance to close the gap. If we're not doing it for ourselves, don't look for handouts from anyone else. Because black folk has been known for a long time to be beggars. And we've been here over 400 years. So why have not we progressed? Even in slavery, in the month of Black History Month, we need to tell their stories, because even those that were enslaved found a way to read and write, become scholars and professors, and some was even able to free themselves and own property. So we need to look at their stories. We need to tell their stories. We need to tell the stories of the drunk man that's on the corner. Why is he drunk? Why is he homeless on the corner? We need to tell the stories of the prostitute. We need to tell, why is she a prostitute? Why is she selling her body? We need to tell the stories about those who are trapped in crack, in methamphetamine. How did they get there? Why are they there? Why are they in that situation? These are the stories that I will be bringing to you. And we'll be presenting these stories from the people on the ground. Because that is what is truly needed. So once again, I invite all suggestions, all solutions, and coming together on what we can do for black folk. So this has been another episode of Black Talk. All are welcome, and I stay tuned to hear from you. Thank you. Peace.